All right. Well, I'm Nancy Antonucci. I have been reading tarot for about, I'd say, nearly 25 years now, and really interested in using it as a creative strategy for people, really helping people go the distance when it comes to kind of creating the life they want and also the life they're called to do from their own heart. So I love everything about brain psychology, archetypes, philosophy. Also, the first half of my life, I was an artist. So I danced and listened to what I call other people's music. So now I'm listening to my own music, and this is the form it's taking. So the whole idea of talking to someone and just about some patterns I've recognized is just like one of my funnest things to do in the world.
Awesome. All right, and today I'm talking with Nancy because what has been on my mind since this turn of the year is why do some people change and why do other people not? And maybe even more to the point, why are there some things around which we find it really easy to make a shift and other things which are really challenging to me, for myself or other people? And this came out of me spending some time reviewing my successes and my not successes in 2010, as well as thinking about the people who've come to work with me, whether it's for a reading or on an ongoing basis, and the successes that they've had and what we could do, what I could do to help them be more successful going in the future with the things that they want to do. So I'm going to just ask you the question right up front. Why do you think some people change easier than others, Nancy?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is that they've walked the road long enough to know why they need to change and to know that they want to change. I mean, it just takes a certain part of the road, I think, to really see the vista. And then the change happens in a minute. So the actual change itself to me is just a minute long, but getting there is miles and miles. And I just think that you're ready to change at a certain time in the road.
And do you think you can do anything to kind of hurry that up? Because a lot of people see the change coming, I think. I mean, when I read for people, and maybe you experience this too, when I say to them, there's this change coming, I realize the cards say you're not happy with your job, the cards say you're thinking of a different direction, and that you already know what it is, and it's time to get going on that. And yet some people still kind of hesitate.
Absolutely. Well, and I think there's a lot of weight that we carry, from our training as a child, from I call it spiritual DNA, just it's in our being to do it a certain way, because that's what feels organic, and it's really not, it's learned. To me, it's kind of like, just you asking that question, Andrew, was like the image that came to me was how the pioneers started off with a full cart, but by the time they were to California, they had thrown half their stuff off. It's like we can't get there with all this crap. So I do think it can be sped along if you can tell them to throw some stuff off the wagon.
That makes me think about the idea that I certainly see in myself as well as in other people that what it looks like is, as clear as we think we are about what the destination might be. I want to go and have this new relationship. I want to leave my part, do whatever to make these changes. What we think it's going to be when we get there is usually quite different.
So the point being that since they don't know what it looks like, or it is very different once you get to the destination, what was your train of thought there?
My thought was that, we start out on this journey and we think, to go back to the pioneers, well, I need all of this and I certainly can't get rid of grandma's teacup and, this pound of orange seeds, even though where I'm going to be living ultimately won't grow them. And, all these things that we realize are unimportant or not viable in our destination. And I'm wondering if there's a way for people to recognize that, to scrutinize that, if there's a way to kind of put that out there and say, hey, you think you need this, but once you get there, you're not going to.
Well, how many people do you know overpack for every trip? I know very few people that actually bring two pair of jeans if they're going to be, like they, it's it, it's like trust. You have to kind of trust that you can handle that unknown. And most people I know, including myself, I totally overpack, you know, because I think I need something for all situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it's interesting, too, the idea of trust. And maybe that is one of the key elements in why some people can change more than others, is that they trust where they're going to end up, that they have a faith that they're either because their life has gone a certain way and they've, you know, recovered or avoided bad problems in the past, or they've got a lot of supports, or they just kind of find that, you know, things often work out for them. Maybe that's one of the key factors, building trust that things
trust
can change.
Themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just talked to a friend of mine who went to India, and the tour guide had asked her, he was a little more interested in her than just being a tour guide. And he was like, just had dinner with her and asked her if maybe it could go somewhere more. And she said, no, you know, I'm really comfortable with where it is. And he said, well, there's my destiny for today. You know, and she realized that was kind of the feeling everywhere, is they would have never assumed how things turned out. That is destiny in India. Is no, you just put your vote in and see what happens. Because that only, you know, I think too that that preconceived notion of what it's going to look like when we get there is scaring us. You know, that too is scaring us, instead of what if we're just putting our vote in and we'll see how the universe dances with us on this, that there's really no way of knowing what it's really going to feel like.
Yeah, and a lot of people really dislike uncertainty. A lot of people are really uncomfortable with that as a even a place to visit, let alone a place to live in, right? And I think that's pretty profound for a lot of people as well, is to do something uncertain, to go and introduce yourself to somebody, you know, to find out what your destiny with them might be for that moment, and take that chance of them saying, you know, I'm not interested, to have it fall flat or to have it turn into something fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I tell people, you know, when I can sense that resistance, when you just have to dance backwards, that's all that life is dancing, but she's leading men. We're dancing backwards. We can't make certain things happen, you know, that it's out of our power to make it happen. I tell them, first of all, enjoy the dance. You're still hearing the song. And second of all, how can it be fun? Like we don't know. So that's what you say to a little kid if they're going to school for the first day and they're scared. It's like, well, what's fun about this? You know, you know, like, how can we have fun doing this? You know, so like I said, you know, back in the olden days when they hunt bison, they paint the bison in the cave walls. And it's like, then rehearse the magic. What will it feel like when you're there? You know, what do you think it will feel like? But do that in a way that's passionate and fun, instead of, no, I have to be in control. You know, I have to know exactly what's going to happen here.
Yeah,
I can usually sell it on that. I can usually market a good idea that way. Because when you say fun, humans usually go, what? You know, can this be fun?
I like fun. Fun is good.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it occurs to me as we're talking that the emotions are actually a really good compass of how to navigate in uncertainty. And what I mean by that is I spent some time in India. I spent about 3 months there. It was a really uncertain thing for me in many ways. I was going to Los Angeles to do some martial arts training with my club. And then after that, I planned to go to Thailand and then India for a stretch by myself and just no plans, just a backpack and see what happened. And when I got to Thailand, it was great and it was easy and it was really comfortable. And then I got to India and flew into Delhi and it was horrendous. Delhi is, it might be the worst place I've ever been on earth. And, you know, so overwhelming, so intimidating, so stressful, so loud, so smelly, just everything that's the sort of antithesis of much of Western society. It's just pile it on top of each other and multiply it by itself a few times. And that was Delhi from my experience landing there. And I wasn't going into it thinking, well, I'm going to let my emotions be the guide. But in terms of the conversation today, what happened was I was like, this sucks. I need to leave, and I need to leave now. And so I basically got out of there as fast as I could. I was like, you know what? I got to leave. I can't handle this. I'm going to go somewhere else. And so I went out to Rajasthan, out into the desert. And the first place I stopped was okay. I kind of adjusted a little bit. It was a lot smaller. And then by the time I got it to Jaisalmer, about 10 days, 14 days after being there, it was pretty empty because it was the off season. And it was really easy to adjust to at that point. And I found my inroads and the things that I enjoyed. And everything kind of went uphill from there. And I think that kind of paying attention to your heart and really saying, I can go into this uncertain situation, and if it's not what I want, then I can shift and kind of flex with it in order to find what I want. And ultimately, after about 3 weeks of being there, I fell in love with India, and really it has a real special place in my heart now. But for the first bit there, I honestly thought, you know what, if this doesn't get any better, I'm going to go to Nepal maybe, or maybe I'll go back to Thailand. I'm like, you're not digging this at all. And that fine balance of staying in the experience so that you're trying to move through it, compared to that, you know, giving yourself the out as well to say, I'm not going to suffer forever with this. If this is not improving, I am going to bail and get somewhere else.
That's right. And, you know, when you're in fear, you know, I think a lot of times, Andrew, my sense is it's not so hard to help someone kind of get very clear about how they want to navigate to something they know they want. Mm-hmm. What's hard is to help someone navigate and they don't know what they want. You know, they don't know. So it's like, okay, so I tell people, you know, I think of this, I love the symbol of Johnny Depp in the Pirates of Penzance. He had that compass that was broken, but it always worked for him.
Mm.
And I said, that's your heart. It may not make sense to anyone but you, but you have to follow north. So it's kind of you. There's no choices when you were just saying, hey, you gave yourself some choices. It's like, I stay here, I go away, you know, and when you're in fear, a lot of times you feel like there's no choice. It's like, I have to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, how about this compass? What if your heart says, you know, we always have choices. Always, 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 always have choices. And in fact, don't make any choices out of fear. So if you really don't know what you need to do, stand here until the party finds you. You know, like, don't go walking around the woods, you know, because you're just going to make one fearful decision after the next. With jobs, for instance, when people talk about jobs to me, it's, or careers, it's like, no parallel jumping. That won't make you happy. What I just heard you say is, I'm not making enough money, I don't like the people I work with, and I don't even really like this particular industry. So no parallel jumping. Let's not distract yourself.
For
Let's
sure.
Really jump. So you stay here until you get enough energy to, you know, really move.
It's a little bit like a pressure cooker. Sometimes you got to keep that pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
As opposed to just the transitory easing that happens from, well, I'll walk into a new relationship, I'll walk into a new job, it'll feel better for a month or 3 months or whatever, and then all the same problems come back again.
Yeah. So I think you can't go for anything but this. It's like, no, 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 not good enough. Let's raise the standard here. What is it? What is better than this?
Well, I think raising the standard is a really important issue too. You know, I think that a lot of people, it's funny when we look at, I'm going to use money as an example here. You know, if you're making a certain amount of money and you're paying your rent and you're buying your groceries, it's okay. You know, you can get by, you got enough money, you know, hopefully nothing happens to kind of cause a problem for you. You know, so if we have a level of financial security or emotional security, you know, that kind of equivalent of that. And then what happens is, suddenly we start making above that mark, it's exponentially better. Once we kind of cover our emotional bases, you know, or certainly our financial basis, and we get into that range that's the next bracket up, that's all gravy all of a sudden. And I think that when we're in a survival mode, which is certainly, you know, runs in and out of that fear zone a lot, when we're in that mode, it's really hard to appreciate how much better things can be just a little bit further the other side of a certain line. Does that make sense to you?
That makes a lot of sense. And also, I would go further with that and say, and where you're standing, where your 2 feet are now, it's fantastic. That's good. It's fantastic where you're standing right now, because that's where we can walk forward from, you know? So it's really helping them feel like, I have the power to do this now, not, oh crap, I need to just do this no matter how. Sometimes, Andrew, I just always go to my, I have a couple stock lines that I go to. You know, after 25 years, you get a little repertoire going, you know, and one of them is, okay, hon, let's just go to the end of your life. It's the last day of your life, and you're looking, and I really, would this be something you would really regret not doing, even if it didn't work out? Even if you really screwed up, at least you tried. So at the end of your life, when you have no fear left about how you're actually going to do your life, because there's not much more life to do, I want to die anyhow. That's my mission. My personal mission is, I want to die going, I really don't have any regrets. I really attempted what I wanted to attempt. And I find a lot of, well, for a lot of people, they hate going to the end of their life anyhow. That's scary.
Sure.
And I was like, that, the day,
what do you mean my life is going to end?
What? But the other thing is, no, how are you making your decisions? You know, is this something you just want now? Or is this something you really, you know, like sometimes, to be honest with you, one of the hardest situations for me is seeing a woman who has had a baby, is happy with one baby, and the whole family, including her husband, are really pushing for more. And she really doesn't want more kids. That's a very tough situation, because it's like, okay, I can hear that. I can hear the pressure you're under. And there's a lot of, I should. But I want you just to go to the end of your life and go, wait, if I just had one kid, would that be cool? Would I really regret not having a second kid? You know, and more times out of not, they'll say no. And it's like, okay, then hear yourself. Know what you know. Life is so short. It's so short that we have to know what we're willing to risk.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I really get that concept. You know, you don't need to make your life more difficult to please other people. You know, you don't need to take them. You know, I mean, we're talking about a child here, which is a lovely thing, unless it's too much of a burden, unless it's more than what you really want to engage. Because, you know, I can tell you, I have two kids, and it's, my dad always says, that's three times the work of having one. And I'm sure that having three kids is like 20 times the work of having two. You know, whether
that's why I had one. Mm-hmm.
And whether we're talking about, you know, children or more responsibility at work or whatever, there comes a line where we get to where we want, and we don't always have to be pushing for more. We don't always have to be trying to grow beyond a level at which we're satisfied.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That is. And that is, change is, you know, I was reading about my financial advisor. She's a great teacher, and she was talking about how when women and gay men, they've done studies and studies about this, we do a lot of money differently than straight men do. Straight men, when they make money, they want to make more money. They don't even question that. It's growth at all costs.
Right.
But women and gay men, when they tend to make a lot of money, it's growth within balance. They stop at a certain point and say, this is good.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. So it's also, you also need to know, I think some wanting to grow is not true. You know, it's, you have to question, why do I want to grow?
Absolutely. You know, I sort of mentioned I went to Los Angeles to train martial arts. So I did a lot of martial arts for a long time. And I got to this point where I was like, you know, I think I'm tough enough. I think this is all I need out of this. And I stopped. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there were specific things that happened that really, really made it clear to me that I had found the answers to the questions, which were spoken and unspoken, that I was looking for. But, you know, it was not easy to go to my instructor who I'd been training with 20 hours a week for like 5 years and say, I'm done. I'm out of the game, you know?
Right.
And I think that acknowledging those truths to ourselves first and then dealing with the rest of the world is also really important. You know, we need to, much like your example of the woman who doesn't want to have another child, we need to be honest with ourselves first.
Right.
And then we'll see what we're going to do in the world. And that self-honesty isn't a commitment to necessarily say, okay, well, this is the only thing I'm going to do, or I have to do this or not do that. But it is the starting point of everything else that needs to come from that.
That's right. It's the beginning of negotiation. What should I do, or what looks right? That's not a true starting point for negotiation.
Absolutely. And
so we're talking, you know, trust, permission, resiliency, self-honesty. You know, that's a lot of inventory. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're doing a lot of inventory work.
Well, and I think it's interesting what's not on our list here that a lot of people associate with a lot of change. Things like willpower, things like discipline, you know, those kinds of things. They're not making it onto our list in this conversation so far. And so I'm curious what you think about that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, I have an opinion, of course. first of all, I got to tell you, from just doing readings, and when people say, when can I come back to you? I'll say every other season, if that, you know. So, but it got to a point a couple years ago where people had one area and were like, who can help me with this? And so I kind of also started another leg to my work, which is coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, we only use the cards as road posts. It's an interactive dialogue with, okay, how do you feel about this? How are you on the road? What's been happening? But I did have one client who is not finishing her PhD. She's not finishing her PhD. And we did readings that said, this is the key to your new career. So there's a stall. She's stalling because she's scared. So I said, okay, two things. One is, if you were having a baby, you are at 7 centimeters right now, and we can't give you an epidural. We can't take, you have to just push this baby out, because it would actually be, you know, we can't do C-section either. Just push. You have to stay here and be uncomfortable for the new thing to come in. And the second thing is, I'm not going to see you until you at least start writing this PhD. No, because she's really good at talking and weaving around action. And it's like, no. Now, and I don't do that with most clients. I don't say, you're not going to talk to me. But I do, every once in a while, I'll get a client who will then use me as their next new distraction.
Sure.
And I name that.
Mm-hmm.
So she actually wrote just the title page in her name, but she said, could I see you? So, but the next session was really cool because we talked about, what is it that she's really resisting? Where are the blocks? What are her fears? And all the fears were all the success and pressure that was going to come through the door if she opened it. You don't have to react to any of that. Just open the door and see what you feel like then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm thinking of the fool as we're talking here, you know, who's launching off of that precipice, you know, whatever it is, depending on the deck that you're using, into the unknown, into what's next, and how a lot of people get to the edge, right to that edge, and they're like, oh my God, I can't take that next step.
Right.
And there is a point at which you can, there's a stage where you can baby step people through things and be like, okay, well, you don't need to do that. Let's just start with the first action. The first action is you write the first page. Next week, you can write the second page. And maybe you can baby step through a PhD thesis, maybe. But there's some things where it's really just a question of, so you baby step to this point, and then you still have to take that step. And there's nothing that can ease that transition. And it's interesting to watch people kind of hover there at the edge and kind of walk up and walk back and walk up and walk back, and they know it, you know it. And you know, with one client I was talking about it the other day, and I was like, so this is the moment where you're about to shoot yourself in the foot. You've got the gun, it's pointing at your foot, and if you don't move it, and by move it I mean accomplish this action, by when? By Wednesday, by Sunday, certainly in the next 7 days, you're going to miss this boat. It's going to be done, and you will have shot yourself in the foot. And we talked about it a whole lot. And it still was a huge struggle because there was no little step. And no matter how much we tried to break it down, there was no small option, because the smallest option, which was write one sentence and post it to Facebook, was still that precipice for them.
Yeah, absolutely. That I use the labor metaphor a lot, even for men or women, because they can see then it's like a whole birth process. It's a whole arc. Mm-hmm. You know, you if you get stuck at that one little spot, everything that you've worked for up to this point can't come into fruition. You know, and it is a matter of surrender.
Mm-hmm. And if the baby is caught in the birth canal, you know, then
yeah, that's right.
Certainly the baby gets into more distress. The mother gets more distress. You know, it's it becomes more frantic as opposed to less frantic the more a person stays in that in-between state, you know, kind of caught between the in and the out, as it were.
Yeah, and I love that. I feel very honored as a reader to be with people in that terrified place.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is... Sometimes it just helps to have someone sit next to you and go, wow, this really sucks. This sucks. You know, and it's like, good. You know, then it's like, you're right. It does. This is horrible. I'm scared. And then start crying. It's like, okay, so how can it be fun? Can we, even in hell, can we have some, what can be fun about this? Not fun in ha-ha fun, but fun in, no, I'm still doing this with me. I'm mm-hmm. still together. I'm not going to break in pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be doing this with myself.
And I think it's something that some people struggle with, where they don't recognize how scared you can be, how uncomfortable you can be, and how important that truth is to moving through it. There is no option but to sit in that uncomfortable place where they're squirming and starting to squirm in the seat and cover up and disappear and, you know, try and hide their face, you know. And the more I see those behaviors when someone's sitting across from me, the more I know that we're getting to the real core of what they don't want to look at, that they need to look at to move ahead.
Right.
And
what I often get is a client will sit, not often, but I know the big flag is up when a client goes, oh, I don't know if I really want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say, yeah, I know you don't. Yeah, that's right. You don't.
Yeah.
Next. So let's talk about it.
Exactly.
Know, just try to help. Just try to, you know, I was seeing, talking to a psychologist who was so lovely in terms of really deeming my work worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Nancy, what you and I have in common is that people come to us and say, and their question is, they come to us because they hope to change something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, I really do feel like that's the kernel of why somebody would come to a therapist, to a reader, is that they really do have a hope to change something. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there if there was no hope.
Hmm.
So how do you work with the hope? And that some of that hope is really painful. And some of that hope is really boring. That's another hard one to deal with. It's like, I know you don't. Yeah, you're not getting anything out of this right now. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Jump through that hoop of fire and do not get singed.
Yeah, you gotta get behind the mule and plow the field. You know, that's it. There's nothing to do more than that until that's done, and then you gotta go up the rows and plant the seeds, and then after that you gotta, you know, next. And a lot of that work is really tedious sometimes. You know,
it
you
is.
Gotta send out 50,000 resumes until you get the one that's actually worth the response that's worth taking.
Right. I just sent out I was thinking of the in bulk, and I thought, you know, the beginning of spring. And it has we've never had a winter quite this big or this cold for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is what it's like to read for clients when they're trying to conceive a baby or they want to sell their house. And you give them a message. You can see very clearly that messages are coming that are saying, yes, this will happen. Yes, this is potential. Yes, this is in your life. But it's just like days like this where it's like, spring is coming? I don't think.
Yeah, here in Toronto, we're about 6 or 7 inches through the 12 inches of snow we're supposed to get by the end of the night tonight, you know? So absolutely, yeah. Spring seems far away. And I think that often that seems the case, you know? Stuff that may only be a month away or 2 months away seems like forever as we're going through it, right?
No, because we can't. Yeah, we're not seeing it. So to me, that is faith.
Yeah, and especially where it's pass-fail, right? Where it's you're pregnant or you're not, you know? You have a new job right. or you don't. It's not like going to the gym where you can measure some kinds of progress. It's you either exactly. are there or you're not, and you're kind of hoping that it's going to manifest somehow.
Right. And I just, that's where the faith comes in terms of life being the, I see life as Fred Astaire and you're Ginger and you're dancing backwards and these things will happen. And, you know, I often tell people, you know, I don't know who your creative unknown is. Is that your higher power? Is that God? Who keeps you going? Who keeps you knowing that? How do you have a good love affair with your own life? Mm-hmm. What do you need to have a love affair with your life? Not tolerate it, not slump through it, not, you know, I just lost my train of thought because my dog just came up and begged me to go out. Yeah, I'm sorry, Jeffy. I'm totally ignoring my dog right now. But it's how do you, the faith is that you absolutely can love your life and it may not be what you think it's going to be. For you to love it, you know, and that, I love that. I always bring the love affair in because, again, that's another thing where people sit up and go, I want a love affair with my life, you know, and it could be fun. Okay.
Yeah.
So how do I present this in a way that feels like it's in your power to do it, you know, and it's your choice. Instead of, nah, life doesn't like me. I hate this dance I'm doing. You know, it won't give me what I need. And it's like, yeah, pretty much. I wouldn't either if you were whining.
Exactly. It's like, oh, yeah. And we've all been there. So this isn't a criticism of anybody. But there's nothing worse than complaining about something that is in a situation that you basically either decided to stick with or manifested yourself and not really recognizing that or owning that. That's the worst thing in the world. You know what I mean?
It's
so frustrating for other people to interact with. And it's so disempowering from the inside too, to be like, oh, you know, I can't do this and I can't do that and I can't do this. And you just get into this like, oh, it's not possible. And I don't have this option. And we forget that, wait a second, maybe I should just give it up. Maybe I should walk away from it. Maybe I need to ask for help and I don't like to ask for help. You know, there's often other options. And I think this is some of the great stuff that can come out of a reading is, hey, go access this asset, go, you know, leverage this or focus on it in this way. And maybe you can make more progress with it.
Yeah. Even know what progress means for you, you know, like what does that actually mean instead of this is what it should look like. It's like, really? What if you were in this nasty marriage and there's kids involved and that's another tricky situation. It's like you can really feel the pull to stay put. But it's like, well, wait a minute, though. What if in this situation where you're standing, you could love your own life under all circumstances? Under all circumstances, your love affair with your own life would literally shift the circumstances around you in ways that you don't know. You know, like if you had a fully loaded magic wand, you know, it's like that could actually start things to shift. And people love that idea where, you know, you're not having to make everything happen. You need to allow things to happen.
For sure.
And takes that effort and that burden out of everything.
I think that can be a really powerful experience for people to basically be like, all right, so what if I just am direct about, you know, what I want? Or what if I intentionally will to be happier and I don't need to focus on what road's going to take me happier? I just need to start making choices today that make me happier today, tomorrow,
Absolutely.
Next week. Start with little things and allow that to kind of create a flow and a momentum. And I think that's an awesome thing. I think the trick with that is that people have this idea that this subconscious sort of sabotage of that, which comes up going, but if I start making myself happy, then then I'm going to have to start changing these things that I'm afraid of changing. And it kind of keeps them going, right? So having that idea you're talking with, that visualization of, what if I just channel down this and love my life now and don't worry about everything else that might come up? What if I just focus on today? I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And some of this stuff could just fall away from me. I won't even have to deal with it. Actually, that can happen. That's not me just selling snake oil. That actually can happen. You know, just, well, if you were happier with your life, you know, what kind of energy does that put into your house or your job or your relationships or your own physical fitness? How does that really change you? You know, you had mentioned earlier in the program about trust, and that some people can do change because they kind of have a good sense or a better sense of, well, I've landed on my feet before, or, you know, I've gotten my, you know, they have a good track record.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think my forte is working with people that have really lousy track records. Like, oh, you know, yeah, you're right. I wouldn't trust you either. Not if you're going to do it like that. I'm not going to trust you, you know. If I were you, I wouldn't trust you either, you know. So I try to give voice to the cynic in them,
mm-hmm.
and kind of going, seriously, look at all the men you have dated. Would you trust you? You know, it's like, I'm not judging you. I'm not shaming you. I'm saying, oh, my God, we need a new model number, you know.
Sometimes people need to recognize that the choices that they have been making haven't been good, and that their new method should be, if I feel inclined to make that decision, I should not. I should hold off on that for a while until sober second thought, you know. And I often hear people who come to me for readings, they come back to me later and say, you know, I was out there and I was about to make this decision, and then your voice popped into my head and you said whatever I had said to them in the reading. And they're like, you know, it's like you're talking to me when I'm not even there. I'm like, cool. You know, I've become the face of their higher self / subconscious motivation to make this change. You know, of course, it's not about me at all. It's just about the way they're integrating it. But yeah, it's really interesting that you get that feedback where you're like, yeah. And then your voice came through just clear as day. Just don't do that. And I didn't. And I'm like, awesome.
I tell people, just allow your taste to change. To me, that's like one of the best definitions I ever heard about growing up is you let your taste change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of like, you know what? I kind of think you're hungry for something different now. You're still eating the same restaurant, the same menu. Could you order something different? Just see what it does for you. Or what are you really hungry for? And be as irrational about that as you want to at this point. You know, could you stop being so practical and go to the irrational? What is the what, not the how? Let's get rid of the how for now, because it's tripping you up. Let's just go for what? What? Mm-hmm. What am I hungry for?
And it's amazing, too, if you take a break from stuff, you know, if you stop eating something for a while, or if you, you know, stop dating for a while or whatever. Sometimes when you go back and you're like, oh, great, I'm going to, you know, after a fast, I'm like, I'm going to go and I'm going to eat this piece of cake and it's going to be fantastic. Exactly. And you start eating it and you're just like, you know, really, I want like a lettuce. I want something green and
that's
leafy.
That's right. Where's that sweet potato?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When we have that pause, it can really help us see or know what's better for us, you know, and just acknowledging when things start to feel a little empty or like they're not as true is a profound experience for people, for me.
Yeah, exactly. When you were talking about those little changes that you enact about just being happier or loving your life, sometimes, you know, what I just heard too was, then just little baby steps changing. Just change little things. Don't drive home the same way. Eat a different breakfast. Eat a really wild breakfast once a week, like hot spinach soup instead of oatmeal. You know, mm-hmm. just interject little changes that would actually titillate you. You know, they're scintillating, you know, so that change isn't... Because I do think humans... Really, I do think we're kind of allergic to change. I mean, yeah. I don't see anyone who really wants to change. You know, like, yes, let's do that change. You know, mm-hmm. Not really. You know,
no, for
I think
sure.
I'm a little allergic to change. But what if it was you know, it's just going to bring a different part of you out that you may not know, but that part could be fascinating.
And I love the idea of letting randomness come into play with that, you know, like dancing with the universe, as you say, you know, being the Fred Astaire and Ginger, right? I do a lot of long distance cycling, and I have set routes that I like, and I get into habits where I'm like riding the same way all the time. And so I'll be like, you know what? It's time to let the traffic lights dictate where I'm going to go. So, you know, so this one means I can right turn on a red anytime, and here in Toronto anyway. And so every time I hit something, I'm going to make a turn. I'm going to go. If I hit a stop sign, I'm going to turn, you know, go where I can go. And it shakes it up. You know, you see new things, you become a little more attentive. You stop just living the motions of stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and I'd seen something this morning. Knowing we were going to do this talk today, to me, it's like a creative soup. You know, when you know you need a good idea, you just like start the soup and see what cooks, mm-hmm. you know, and what ideas come in. Because to me, intuition and new ideas and creativity is about allowing your sideways to happen. You know, instead of forward like a dog, you're sideways like a cat.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know, what needs to just come in. And this morning, someone sent me a YouTube of a chimpanzee mother who was coming to terms with the fact that her infant had died.
Mm.
And the infant was laying there, you know, obviously very dead. And they kept saying like 7 minutes later, 10 minutes later, and she would go over and touch it and see if it was breathing or, you know, if it was warm. And then she'd walk 3 feet away and just sit and look at it. And then she'd go over 7 minutes later and do it. And I'm thinking, some change like death really has to happen in cycles. It can't happen from here to there. You need circles. Mm-hmm. You need spirals to kind of, I need to wrap my mind around this. You know, it's like you need time. And I also, on one hand, I feel like sometimes people stand at the edge of the cliff, I just want to shove them, like, go!
Yeah.
You know, and then there's another, it's like, no, hon, no, you're not ready to step off the cliff. You know, mm-hmm. this would not be the time to make a life-changing decision. You know, not when you're grieving, not when you're in pain, not sometimes we don't have the choice. We have to make a life-changing decision. But I always, too, it's like, wait, do we need to make this decision right now? Is it the timing for this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really important point, too. It's important not to project or cross over our need for change, you know, onto our need for change, the stuff that we're struggling with. You know, if we're going through a hard time about a loss or, you know, an injury, say, or an accident, you know, I mean, there's lots of stuff. We need to focus on dealing with that first, you know. And I mean, I went through some loss year before, I guess. And the first thing to do was to deal with that. And everything else basically went on the back burner. Changes and plans and other stuff. It's like, you know what? Those things are less important than getting okay with this loss and then dealing with that. And once that's dealt with, once that's more stable, then turning back to living your life and focusing those rest of those things. And I think a lot of people, you know, and certainly myself included, sometimes we want to turn our attention to something that we can control when our life is out of control.
Exactly.
Instead of turning it to what is the healing process for this? How do I get support? How do I get, you know, spiritual, emotional physiotherapy? How do I overcome this?
Right.
How do I deal with these problems? Because if we don't deal with that foundational stuff, whatever we build is, of course, going to be unstable afterwards.
Exactly. And that also it's never kind of done. It's like deeper layers, you know, some growth. Like I lost my best friend to Dennis in AIDS in 1995. And it still surprises me, not that I miss him because we talk regularly, but that the feeling of that grief every once in a while in the most surprising places that I'm ready to kind of go a deeper level of accepting him and I not being in physical form together.
Mm-hmm.
So I also, because, you know, and I'll talk to people, and even though a lot of us are like, no, I've dealt with my childhood. No, I've gone to therapy. No, that's not, no. You know, and I just want to say, okay, okay. Well, then here's a new layer to look at because it's in a deeper place than you may realize, you know. In other words, actually, Andrew, I have a here's one of my theories that I feel that everyone should get paid for how they survived childhood. Because those skills are so weird that you should get paid for them. And in other words, don't do them unless you're getting paid for them. You know, so when I was young, I was the negotiator in my family. And mm-hmm. I also learned how to severely dissociate just to survive Catholic school. Mm. I'm getting paid well now to dissociate. You know, and I, as long as I have this skill, why not make it work for me and everyone around me?
Yeah.
You know, so it's not a bad, I don't think that some of the changes we've gone through are bad and that's it. And that chapter's closed. It's like, wait, could I benefit from that?
Mm-hmm.
What I learned, could the people in my life benefit from that? You know, that was a chapter in my life. It's an important book.
Yeah.
You know, like,
with our sort of survival techniques and stuff, especially when we're no longer in those situations, that we need to make a decision. Are we going to go pro? Or are we going to get rid of it? You know, because it's one or the other. To kind of, you know, continue to be an amateur forever is just not all that helpful, right? It just kind of gets in the way.
Every once in a while, I'll meet a spirit or a person. I what I believe is that we're all spirits having a human adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a short one. It really does. It is. It's really short. It may not feel short, you know, but it really, pretty much, it's a really short adventure. So how can it feel like an adventure?
Mm.
And I think that sometimes people have an idea of this is where I need to change in terms of areas in their life instead of that big change. Wait, how am I just here? You know, is this an adventure for me? I know a lot of people have it, you know, like I read for a client who was really, she felt like she was in a miserable marriage, but I kept getting images of her singing and I couldn't get these images out of my mind. And I just said, were you an opera singer? You know, and she goes, no, but I always wanted to do musical theater. And I thought, you know what? Let's not focus on the marriage. I know that that's primary in your life right now. And you're looking at it. But I actually think you should go audition for Robber Bridegroom and see what happens. Mm. You know, because it's not what we think might be what needs to change might not be what needs to change at all.
For sure. And certainly if we're missing something pretty big. You know, one of the things that I find myself kind of saying to people every now and again is primarily to women is, you know, you're dissatisfied with your life and you're dissatisfied with your job and this and that. And yeah, those things need to change. But there's a piece that you're never going to be satisfied with until you're a parent, until this, you know. Sometimes there's these things that are somewhere in our future.
Yeah.
That we need, that we just intrinsically need, and that dissatisfaction gets rolled into everything else in the present, when in fact it needs to kind of be corralled and kind of marked off as, you know, there's a baseline dissatisfaction with everything. Nothing will ever be perfect until I get to this place, until this thing happens. And realistically, it's not relevant to right now. So
right. And I would say what I would sense with that, with those situations, is there's a hopelessness has come in.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do that. I'm feeling a little bit hopeless with everything instead of, no, hey, there's some good stuff going on now. Let's just, yeah, like you said, let's corral the energy. Let's really focus on where we want this ship to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, and knowing that you can change on the journey, you know, like bigger, better things are going to come up.
For sure. And I think that the other thing that tends to happen too is once you get into changing, you know, it's like a fitness routine, you know, the first couple of times are hard to get there, but once you start going, then it starts to become, it gets its own momentum. It has its own gravity.
Right.
And it's like, okay, now I want more. Now I want more. And a lot of the things that might come up along the way in our lives, you know, once we start the journey, the energy to deal with them will be there. You know, the
Absolutely.
Solutions will come to us. Our emotional capacity to navigate them will come to us
right.
along the journey. You know, we can't throw away grandma's teacup when we first land coming over from the old world to go back to your pioneers. But, you know, right. once we get a bit halfway through and we're carrying this extra weight and it's slowing us down, yeah, it's going to be gone, done, next, or whatever right. else we need to part with. So,
yeah, that willingness to open and permit what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. And so is there anything you want to say to wrap this up?
The only other thing I would add is, you know, one of the best things that somebody could do is just, I tell people, you know, tell your friend to sit there and witness you, listen to you, engage with you, and not fix you.
Mm-hmm.
As you tell them what this process feels like for you. You know, because you need to teach people how to love you to get the support you need to do the changes you need to make. And it's amazing how many people just kind of let their friend fix them all the time. You know, it's like, no, you have to teach them how to witness you. So mm-hmm. the woman that's having the baby, she does have some control to look at the nurses and say, back off. I can do this. You know, in yep. fact, you're scaring me. That's the only other thing I could think
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I love the all the birthing analogies. My wife and I have two kids. One's almost 4 and one's 20 months now, I guess.
Oh.
And wow. we had home births for both of them.
Oh.
And man. The first one was born in a bathtub in our living room and at the old place where we used to live. And I supported my wife through the whole deal. And the second one was born in our house where we live now, in the bathtub. And I got to catch her and be there for kind of the whole thing as well and stuff like that. So, yeah.
You know, I got to tell you one other little thing.
Yeah.
During my birthing was really wonderful. I had a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
I felt comfortable. I was in the hospital, but we were able to turn lights off and it was great. But when I was pushing the baby out, this other nurse came in and she was really, I did not like her at all. And all she kept saying was, keep breathing, go soft. You know, that's all she kept saying.
Really helpful, eh?
I'm going to kill her, but it actually felt good to kind of have something to butt my head up against mm-hmm. to have that. You know, she gave me the wall
yeah.
to kind of smack myself up against. And deep down in my head, I said, oh, my God, I think she's giving me the mantra for my life is go soft and keep breathing.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, thank you, Andrew. It was a joy.
You are very welcome.
Talk with you.
So this has been Andrew McGregor interviewing Nancy Antonucci. This interview is part of a series of interviews about change and changing that will be appearing on my blog over the coming weeks and months. You can look forward to hearing interviews with James Wells and Rachel Pollack and other people who I'm still chatting with about getting them on this process. You can find these interviews at thehermitslamp.com and just look for the tab for the blog. I hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, please share it so that other people can enjoy it as well.